Blog Talk Radio.
Mayor de Blasio wants New Yorkers to tell the police if they see someone not social distancing. New Yorkers won't tell the police if they see a murder. New Yorkers might live with rats, but we ain't no rats. They should do it. He should do it the way we always did. If you see something, say something, but from 6 feet away. I'm Brett Singer. This is my show. Mayor de Blasio's a moron. Mayor de Blasio's a moron. He's big dummy, oh yeah, big dummy, dummy. Not a big de Blasio fan here on Brett from the Bunker. It is Saturday. It is May 23rd. It is 2020. It is raining. And I am joined today by Stephanie Goldklang. Stephanie, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you for coming on. I ask everyone this. This is the first question. I will ask you, how are you holding up?
I'm holding up really well. I will say that in New York City, I feel like people are starting to come out of their small apartments and taking longer walks and being socially distant, but I feel pretty good. Obviously, it's different, but making the best of it.
Yes, well, they're clearly different. They're clearly different, clearly making the best of it. What are you doing to stay sane?
To stay sane, let's see. I've been finding different shows on TV that I might have missed when things were busy before quarantine, so enjoying some shows, different movies. I have been performing in some virtual comedy shows, which has been a lot of fun, and been writing a lot of comedy, so that's been great to work my mind in that way. And going on these walks, exploring the city when there's not as many people out, you see things you didn't see before, statues, different street names, so that's been keeping me sane. Of course,
that's,
you know, everyone has their day.
Yeah, but that's interesting. I saw Mark Norman did a thing where he walked around the city and sort of, you know, like he cut his toenails in Central Park. And, you know, like he also went swimming in Central Park, which was vile. I can't really recommend that. But it was interesting to, you know, it's sort of like, oh, yeah, I guess the city's kind of empty. So maybe this is a chance to walk around and see some stuff. And, you know, it was interesting. It was kind of a funny video, and more to the point, it gave me some ideas. I was like, maybe I should just take a walk over to Times Square and see what it's like with nobody there.
Yes, it is. I've seen a couple of Mark's interviews where he's been in the city, and I think there is something to be said about exploring and seeing things from a totally different perspective. So, yes, I'm going to try to do a little bit more of it. I know it's raining today, but the rest of the weekend's supposed to be nice, so hopefully we'll do some additional exploring.
Yeah, that annoyed me. I have a complaint to lodge with Mother Nature is, you know, come on, it's raining. This is the day I take a walk. I don't take a walk every day. I got to get out. I need to get out of here. This is ridiculous. Come on. Help me out here.
I know. It's like, give us a break. And it's like, you can go to the beach, you can't swim, but if you go to the beach, it's raining. So we're not catching a break, but I think tomorrow we might.
So how are you finding the virtual shows?
I like doing the virtual shows. I think people need humor now more than ever before, and certainly the virtual modality is not the same as being on stage, so you don't have the same level of audience centricity to get the audience to really be integrated into the show. But I think it's a format that's allowing comedians to be able to get people to laugh. People don't have to leave their home, and it really provides people the same level of access. So you don't have to be located in a major city to see professional comedians perform. So I think it's been giving people additional avenues to get to see people they really enjoy. So I think it's been good. I know we've talked about it. It's not the same as being in a live audience, but I think people are pivoting and being open to exploring different ways to reach new audiences with new material.
Yes. No, I agree with that. I think it's, I think, yeah, I mean, new material is key, although some people are doing, you know, their old stuff, just adapted a little bit. I'm always more interested to hear people's different quarantine takes, you know, you know, these are funny people. These are people that I like as comedians in general. So I am curious to, you know, like tonight I'm doing a show and I'm really curious to hear Casey Arora, and I'm hoping he talks about, you know, what's going on, because he's very funny. Aaron McGuire, very funny. Mark Jagarjan, very funny. You know, Holly Harper, hilarious. Like, you know, Holly I had on the show. So there's just, it's interesting that I keep saying this, so apologies to anyone who's hearing me repeat it, but that we're in a very interesting shared experience, that this is a rare situation where we're all kind of doing the same thing. And so therefore we can have a shared vocabulary.
Very much so. I mean, I feel like there's more intimacy that you're seeing comedians literally perform from their apartments, their homes. They're opening themselves up really to their audiences, that you're not seeing them way far away on a stage. You're really seeing them and can see their expressiveness. I think part of comedy really is not just the content and not just the delivery, but it's how you give that delivery. So what's your body language? What's your expressiveness? And when you're in a virtual setting, you can really feel the joke, I think, a lot of times in a deeper way. You don't have to have a front row seat. I mean, you literally do have a front row seat when you're on a virtual show. So I think it does offer this new way to feel more connected with the comedians and feel more connected with the jokes and feel like they're very relatable.
Sure.
And everyone's going through the same thing. We're all feeling the same things, which is a very unique situation. And finding the humor in that, I think, is really important.
Do you find that it's a little harder to laugh loud when it's just you sitting at your computer?
When you're an audience other
member.
People and like
when you're an audience.
Yes,
member, yeah.
I do, because you feel like when you're in a club, there's always a lot of different noises. There's wait staff coming and delivering. There's people having, you know, they're laughing collectively at their tables. So you do feel like it's a little different, but I think people should feel encouraged to laugh and really be themselves, because it is, for comedians, they feed off that energy. I mean, we feed off that energy as comedians, where somebody's laughing and you feel like, okay, that joke's working and I can expand upon it. Or people are really liking, you know, for me, I do a lot of observational humor. I do humor about my mom, about dating. And so if I hear people laughing, I'm like, people are really feeling the dating jokes right now. So maybe I'll add a little bit more to that. So the harder people are laughing virtually, it gives people the sense, or the comedians a sense, of what's working and where do they go and where can they pivot within their set.
Now, what if you're just not hearing anything, which is going to happen? Like, I find that you can't really consider that a bomb. Like, if you're at a club and nobody's laughing, that's a bomb. But if you're doing a virtual show and nobody's laughing, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bomb. It could just mean their mic is muted.
Right. Well, I always, you know, it's funny. My father and I love Rodney Dangerfield. I grew up listening to Rodney Dangerfield. And still, when I watch videos of him saying, you know, about the mic, is this on? You know, I'm working up here. And I always think about that, because whether you're in a live show and people aren't laughing and you feel like, hey, is this joke not funny? Or you're in a virtual show and you're not sure, are people A, not laughing, or B, their mics are turned off or they're muted? So just kind of think of that Dangerfield philosophy of just, hey, I'm working here, and just keep going, and try to find the natural pauses that you would do if you were doing a live show, and just keep going, because I think there is a sense of ambiguity with it. You're not quite sure. And I think you can also pause just like a live audience and say, hey, is anyone out there? Can you hear me? Or has anyone ever been? I do a joke about medieval times. I say, has anyone out there been to medieval times? Just to see if you can get even one or two people to provide some of that audience participation, I think is really helpful.
I agree. I think that is helpful. We were talking about this, like my experience being an audience member last night, I realized I should have had a little more sympathy for people because you're in your house and it's a little tougher. Like it's hard to not be distracted by things. And I would mute myself, you know, rather than make any noise that disrupted the show. But, you know, I wanted to be completely present and I found that like, well, it was time for another drink, you know, like it was just, you know, and that's okay.
Right.
It's just, you know, there's no wait staff coming to get me, you know? And so
right.
At some point it's like, well, I guess I gotta go, you know, and then I'll be back. It's not that big a deal,
right.
But you know, I don't know. I feel like we're going to crack it at some point, but I don't know that it's anytime soon. I think it's really going to take a lot of experimenting.
I think it will, but I think there's a resiliency with doing comedy shows virtually so that when things do start to open up and comedians find themselves back on stage and people find themselves back connecting with colleagues in their offices, I think the rigor that it takes to be truly present virtually, I think it's going to allow people to feel like it's even more natural when they're in person. It's almost like the default comes out when they're in person because you do have, there is a definite different level of presence that's required. And I think people also need to, just like a real show, people get up, people have to go to the bathroom, people might turn to their neighbor, you know, in their table and say, hey, like, you want to order another drink? And so there's definitely times even in a live show that it takes, like I said, that resiliency to just keep going with your set. And not worry. And so I think in virtual settings too, like if someone gets up or someone looks like they're not looking at the camera and they're supposed to be an audience member and really engaged in your set, to just find it in yourself to keep going and to be able to just be able to mitigate those situations and have fun with it. I think to not take anything too seriously and just have a fun time with it.
Yeah, that's what Jim Mandrino said. Jim's a comedian with like 30-plus years of experience. He runs the New York Underground Comedy Festival, which wraps up this weekend.
Yes.
So you should all go check that out. And he said just plow. Like just get up there and just do your thing and don't worry about it. And I thought that was really good advice. I've tried with the pauses, without the pauses, and I'm still undecided, to be honest. Sometimes I do it with more pauses. Sometimes I do it with less. It's just when there's, you know, I try to listen for any kind of feedback, you know, like laughter, but it's often very quiet, even if you are getting it, and I'm louder than they are. So you know, it's not like in a club where laughter is nice and loud, hopefully. So yeah, I don't know. We'll keep playing with it, and eventually we'll get it right. Let's talk a little more about you. How did you get into comedy?
So I mean, I always loved comedy. I mean, as I mentioned, my father and I loved Rodney Dangerfield. I loved watching comedians growing up, and I always wanted to make people laugh. I was always trying to make my younger brother laugh, and then as I got older in college, I was making my sorority sisters laugh, and it was always this kind of dream, but I put it aside, and it wasn't until 3 years ago that I was in New York and I took a comedy class, and I just got hooked. And then I started doing shows. I know a lot of people are familiar with bringer shows. When you're first starting out, you bring friends and family to shows. You're looking to get spots wherever you can to get time to work on your sets. And then this past year, right before the quarantine, I competed in the Caroline Smart Broadway's
nice.
Competition for up-and-coming comedians, and so I'm working on my craft, and I'm very excited to be part of this group of people, and, you know, I love seeing professional comedians. I love being part of a group of comedians that are just getting their start, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, the comedy community has been very – this is another repeated theme on this podcast, but I've been very blessed and enjoying the comedy community. I find that, you know, I've made a lot of good friends. I'm not sure what I'd be doing if I weren't doing comedy during this, because this is really – that's basically all I do is I write comedy. I go to open mics. I do virtual shows, and I'm doing sort of comedy-adjacent things like this, or I've got another podcast, you know, that it all kind of comes back to comedy. So that's really been the important thing in my life.
Yeah, what's so great about you, and, you know, I've seen you perform, and you're fantastic. I'm going to attend your show tonight.
Thank you. And,
you know, we connected when we went to see a mutual friend perform, and that's what I love about comedy is that comedians are really open. I have connected with comedians that have been in the business for 30 plus years, like Brian Scott McFadden and Steve Marshall, who are really open to talking to you after your set and really connecting. And that's, I think, the beauty of comedy is that whether you're a first year starting out or you've been in the business and you're a professional 30 plus years, I think there's a connectedness to it because there's this sense of vulnerability anytime you go up on stage. I think for the most seasoned comedian, there's still this level of vulnerability. Like, what's the crowd going to be like tonight? Is this new joke I wrote, is it going to work? And I just love this ability to connect. I mean, here in New York, I mean, we connected very quickly when we're just the shared love of comedy and we're there to support another fellow comedian.
Right.
And you've been at it way longer than I have. And the fact that you just sat down and you were just so open and willing to talk to me about how I've gotten started, I think just is a really fun community to be a part of.
I'm not that long. I'm only in my second year. So, you know, like
I did not know that. I thought you were at it for longer. So.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
So, I think that's the other thing. I think there's a lot of clubs around the country that are willing to give funny people a chance. So whether you've been at it a year, 2 years, 15 years, you know, being able to get up there, you know, 3 minute, 5 minute, 10 minute set and get people to laugh, that's how you get started. Is the first laugh you hear, you start to feel like, okay, I really want to do this. I want to keep going at it. And it's certainly, you have to pay your dues and there's a lot of different steps, I feel like, to get the time and to get past at clubs. But I think there's a real willingness from people that have been in the community for a long time to put out their hand and grab your hand and pull you along. So I think
100%, totally agree. I've found really, I've found really, really positive, fun people. And I just, I don't know. There was a lot of, I hear a lot of, you know, oh no, comedians are terrible. You know, comedians are just, you know, they're jealous and they're this. And I'm sure that's true. I'm sure that will happen. But that has just not been my experience. People have been very nice, you know, and very generous. Like if somebody's got a tag for you, they'll just give it to you. It's not like, you know, pay me for this. It's sort of like, hey, you know what might be good? Why don't you try it like this? You know, okay,
right.
Sure, why not? I'll try it like that.
Yeah.
You know, no downside. Like, let me give it a shot. You know, Corey Kahaney did that for me once, and I was like, well, there's no downside there. Like, you know, Corey Kahaney's hilarious. If she thinks I might work better that way, it probably will. You know, so I'll give it a shot. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But you know, that's the other thing I really like about comedy is you can just get up and try it. You know, you go to an open mic, you go to a show, and you just sort of say, well, I'm going to try the joke this way now. And if it works, you'll know immediately. And if it doesn't work, you will know pretty much immediately. Like maybe you give it another try if it's something else that's real that works. How long do you work on a joke? Like, do you find that it can take months and months, or does it just sort of if it doesn't come to you immediately, do you get rid of it?
Yes, I mean I keep a notebook and then I transfer my notes over into the computer just so I have it saved, and I start creating categories where it's like there's dating or there's I did a whole bit about jury duty. And so I have these categories. And if I think something's funny or I hear something on a plane or on the street in New York, and I'm like, oh, I think that could be something, I'll just jot the notes down. And then over time, I start to build a set based on those notes. And sometimes it takes just to have a quick tag, like you mentioned, it could take just an hour because you're like, oh, that could work there. Whereas my jury duty bit, I worked on over a couple months just perfecting it and finding what are the right words. I think word choice, as you mentioned, like it can be just one word or one edit to your joke that can make the difference. And so it can be anywhere from just an hour that you feel like, oh, that's a joke, to a couple months of really refining a joke. And I think my style is more around storytelling. And so I think one of the challenges that I have is to really be able to edit a story down to be able to have those elements that create laughter before you get to the punchline. So the story has to be really tight and succinct enough so that you get to the punchline, you get to the laugh, and you build on it so the audience is with you through the entire story. So every comedian has a different style, but I would say mine is more focused on the storytelling, which can take a little longer, I think, to refine.
Was that a conscious choice? Did you say, I want to be more of a storyteller, or is that just sort of how it came out?
I think that innately I am more of a storyteller. So I think over time, you know, as I would tell people jokes, they had more of a story element to it. And I think I find the funny in my life. I'm a little bit self-deprecating. So I think naturally, inherently, I have more of a storytelling style. So I think it was not necessarily a conscious choice, but it was one that I think was sort of made for me because that's just a little bit of who I am.
Right. That's fair. Yeah, because I think that's what happens. Like, I don't know that somebody, like, I mean, unless maybe Mitch Hedberg, but, you know, like, he maybe set out to be a one-liner comic, but I also think that's just how it came out for him. You know, like, when I started, I was a total one-liner comic. That was what I did. That was what I had. That was what I was comfortable with. And then gradually the jokes have gotten longer and longer and longer. Like, I realized the other day that, you know, it used to be, I have a page in my notebook, and it's sort of, and it's two jokes. And they're not fully finished by any means, but they're sort of, you know, joke starters. But each one is a half a page. And even a year ago, that would have been a sentence, or maybe two sentences like that, because that's just how my brain was working. So it's just, it's interesting how you evolve and sort of, you know, how your act evolves along with you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've seen you do the storytelling, but I've also seen you do that really succinct zinger type joke, and like even on your Twitter feed, like really tight joke that you don't need any other story wrap around, just that one sentence is funny in itself. And I think that's a real talent, because I think that those one-liners can be harder than finding the funny within a story. So it is interesting. Like you said, as you evolve, I think each comedian finds a different style, and not just about their content, but how they use the tone of their voice, the pitch of their voice, how they walk around the stage in a virtual setting. How are they using their facial expressions to be congruent with the message they want, with the joke that they're telling? If you're doing impersonation, certainly that you want to work on that facial expression piece. And that's something I've been finding, especially in the virtual setting. If I'm doing an impersonation of my mom, you know, how am I doing that virtually versus when I'm on the stage and I kind of use more of my body language? So I think that's an interesting piece, is finding the evolution of not just your content, but your style and your voice and everything that makes you
right,
as a comedian.
Right. Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with that. If you do an impression of your mom, you can do it pretty much however you want, though, because no one knows. at least not the general audience. I shouldn't say no one knows,
right,
but not as many people. If you do
right,
an Obama, you better get it down pretty
right,
exact. But other than
so,
that, like I don't know about you, it drives me nuts when someone does an impression and it's sort of like, well, that's not what that person sounds like. Like, you know, I understand that you're saying that's what it is, but that's not really a good impression. Like, a good impression is like a magic trick. I mean, that's, you know, really good impressionists are, you know, they can just pull anybody out of a hat and it's just fantastic. But then if they hit a clunker, to me, it's always like, maybe you shouldn't be doing that one, you know. It's tricky, but I know you're a good impressionist, but for whatever reason, you haven't hit that one yet.
Right. So I guess my mom would be my harshest critic on that whether I sounded like her or not. So I do think you're right. If you're an impressionist, it's a very refined style of comedy. It's refined in that you have to continuously work on that. So I know Bob DeBono, a comedian that I know,
sure,
he does Trump, and I think he's perfected that over time with everything from tics to how Trump walks and how, you know, Trump inflects. That takes time to refine that and work on it to really be able to be, you know, really feel the essence of that person. And how are they think? Like, how does that person think? So if they're doing a joke or they're doing a set and somebody in the audience is participatory and they, you know, kind of thinking about how would this person that I'm impersonating react? I think that takes truly refine.
Yes, 100%. No, the work. I don't mean to diminish what an impressionist is doing. What their work is really difficult. That's not something that's in my wheelhouse. I do sort of suggested impressions where, you know, like you'll know what I'm doing, but it's not really an impression. Like it's not something. No one's ever going to close their eyes and think, oh my God, that's really Seinfeld. You know, it's not like when Jimmy Fallon does Seinfeld. Like, see, Jimmy Fallon could be Seinfeld. Like he could go on the road and do Seinfeld routines, and everyone would be fine with it because he just sounds so much like Seinfeld. It's, you know, it's scary. Like he's one of those like top notch, phenomenal impressionists.
Yes.
You know, whereas like if I do it, it's like, you know, what do we do? It's out of control. You know, like it's just, you know what it is. You got the right idea, but it's not really, you know, like you're not going to close your eyes and think you're watching Seinfeld. Like, you know, so I'm not kidding myself.
But I think there's funny in that. Like if you're like,
oh, sure.
Bret Singer doing Seinfeld, like just now you made me laugh. Like, right. So it's even if you're not like doing a full impersonation, you're doing just a sort of a nod to it. I think there's funny in that too. If you acknowledge it and say, oh,
maybe
here's
I'll
my
add it
version
to the arsenal.
Of the,
yeah, my version of Seinfeld. And one thing, Matthew Friend does something interesting where he does impressions of impressions. Like he's a very good impressionist,
yes.
But he also does. And it's interesting because it does, what it points out is how different the Trump impressions really are. Is that, you know, Alec Baldwin sounds nothing like Stephen Colbert, you know, who sounds nothing like Trevor Noah, and they're all ostensibly doing Trump, and they're all recognizable as Trump. But
yes.
It's not really the same thing. They're really very, very different.
I saw that bit that he did, and I thought it was hilarious because his impersonation of those that were impersonating were spot on. And so I thought that was a very unique bit that I've seen him do.
Yeah, no, he's very talented. Very young, too, super young. I think he just graduated from NYU.
Like early 20s.
Yeah, very, very young. Very, very young. He was on the show I saw last night. He was good. But it just sort of got me thinking about impressionists because there are definitely people who will try an impression. What I find interesting is when someone does an impression of someone, but no one really knows who it is. Like that's always a little tricky. He doesn't do that, but I can't think of the name. But I've been at shows where someone will do a comedian, and like all the comedians are laughing, and it's like, but no one else in the audience knows who the hell you're doing, and it's sort of. Like, well, what are you doing, man?
Yes.
You don't have to do Trump, but you got to do somebody that people have heard of. You know, like Gilbert Gottfried used to do Jerry Seinfeld, and only the people in the club got it because nobody else knew who Seinfeld was at the time. But he would do apparently the spot. Gilbert Gottfried does a spot on Seinfeld. It's a perfect impression. It's hysterical. He does a thing of David Brenner talking to Jerry Seinfeld, and it's basically, you know, it's like, who are these people eating pizza? You know, they're just going back and forth. The thing about pizza is that you got to go when you get stuck in the roof of your mouth, and, you know. And it's absolutely hilarious. But he did it way back when. So I guess maybe I'm wrong. I'm going to take that back because maybe it is okay to just be making the comedians laugh. But because sometimes
like
that's
said,
important.
I mean, yeah, sometimes there isn't. And I think in New York or anywhere, you comedians are constantly cognizant of, hey, are there a lot of tourists in tonight that might not know some of the up-and-coming comedians in New York that if I were to do impersonation of them, maybe those in the room tonight wouldn't know. So figuring out the audience is always, I think, a piece of it. And I think depending upon the time of the night, you know, the club that you're at, you might be kind of moving content around in your head around what's going to work, because I think sometimes you realize, oh, this audience really is liking this and I should stand on this versus trying to do something that they just might not receive as well.
Yeah.
Which I think is the challenge of the virtual, is that the beauty of comedy is it's such a joint experience between the audience and the comedian. I can't think of really anything else that truly is that, where it's never going to happen that same way again. It's totally unique to that evening, to that moment where the audience is receiving the jokes and the comedian is receiving the energy and can pivot accordingly. So I think that is some of the differences with virtual, right? That you don't have that shared experience as much. And so I think there's such uniqueness to what happens every night, because I might go see you on a Friday night and there's a different energy with the audience, and they're wanting to hear different parts of your jokes. And then I see you the next night, and it might be completely different because you're like, oh, this audience isn't feeling my Seinfeld impersonation as much, so maybe I'll move into jokes about my kids or whatever
right.
it might be. So I think that is really a fun part of seeing comedy. You can see the same comedian multiple times and have a totally different experience.
You are
based on
wonderfully.
The audience
I just have to say, you are wonderfully positive. Like I feel like a serious negative Nell right now, because you're finding the positive spin in everything, and it's really terrific. It's really kind of wonderful to talk to.
I try to be, but you know, I think you know when I'm not doing comedy, I work for a company where we train. Those in mostly Fortune 500 companies around how to present more effectively, how to communicate with a greater sense of authentic presence. And our company was training face-to-face pretty much 80% before the quarantine, and we're training 80% on virtual, in a virtual modality. And it is hard at times to stay positive, right, because it's totally changed our business model. But I think that's the only thing you can do is be positive. And the only thing that I think helps me remain positive is comedy. If I'm stressed, I'll go on YouTube and pull up my favorite comedians and just watch some jokes to kind of calm me down or try to make me feel more positive about things. And I think laughter is really the only thing that we have to really keep us going and find the humor in it.
So who are those favorite comedians?
So I love, well, I know I've talked a lot about Dangerfield, and that was really amazing the first time I got to perform at Dangerfield's in the Upper East Side.
Sure.
What's funny is in the first part of my career, I worked for the Muscular Dystrophy Association and worked on the Jerry Lewis Labor Day Telethon. So got to work and meet some of the comedians from that started, like Norm Crosby and Jerry Lewis, and so that was really fun.
Sure.
And now I really love a lot of the New York comedians that I'm able to see on any night of the week. Like I love Lenny Marcus. I like Jessica Kirsten. I love up-and-coming comedians, like when we were talking before about you and I met when we were watching a fellow friend comedian, Zarna Garg,
sure.
who's newer to the scene. And so I love comedians that have been around for a long time. I love comedians of yesteryear that I can still, even unfortunately that they're no longer with us, I can still see their comedy and pull it up online. And I can also see someone that's just starting out, or like you mentioned, Matt, just graduated from college, and I can see him and appreciate his style. So I think I have a real mix of comedians that I enjoy and love to watch.
That's great. That's terrific. That sounded like a pretty wide range. I mean, you're going from Rodney Dangerfield to, you know, Matthew Friend. That's a
yes.
That's a wide range. You know, and Lenny Marcus, Jessica Kirsten. You know, Kirsten. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Kirsten. Yeah, K-I-R-S-O-N.
Kirsten.
I think I pronounce. Yeah. So
okay.
Yeah, she's hilarious and she's,
so funny.
I mean, she's been at it for years. Sorry, who'd you say?
No. Yeah, I'm agreeing with you. She's hilarious.
Yeah, she's been at it for years, and she just, I think it was last year, got a special that Bill Burr hosted. And I mean, that just goes to show you some of these comedians who have been working and been at it for years. Before you see them do a special, a lot of them have been on the road for 10 plus years before they get a special like that, or are able to get, you know, a half hour, hour on Comedy Central. So I think that's really, there's a lot of dedication, and I have so much respect for comedians that have been working at it. Like you look at, like you said, someone like Matt right out of college that are, you know, working it and going out every night and performing and really have to build their following. And it takes a long time, I think, for comedians. I think it's probably the hardest discipline out there. You're your own writer. You're your own editor. You're your own performer. You're a lot of times your own agent or manager until you get to a point in your career that you would have that. So you have to wear all these different hats and have to be at it every night and not let one show or maybe people weren't laughing as much get you down. You have to have that confidence and that positivity to keep going. And so I have so much respect. For me, comedy is something newer in my life, and I'm doing it, and you know, but I'm not a professional, and I, you know that it would take a lot to get to a professional level. So have a lot of respect for those that have been doing that and honing their craft for
right.
such a long time.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Have that resiliency that I mentioned before, that resiliency to say it's, I'm going to just brush off that and go on. And I think, I mean, most comedians, I mean, they're doing like 5 sets a night at different clubs. So they can't let one show get you down, because you might, the next one could be the one that just feels like it's on fire and it's great. And you feel like
right.
you walk out and you're like, oh my gosh, that was awesome. So there's a lot of variability, and there's a lot of factors that go into that variance, I think.
Who's a comedian you'd really like to meet and talk to? Like, so if you could sit down and have like a comedy conversation with them, who's somebody that might fit that bill?
I mean, I really love Amy Schumer. I mean, I've always loved Amy Schumer. You know, she's one of the comedians that when I like feel stressed at night, I'm like, I just need to laugh. Or she's doing a cooking show now with her husband. I mean, it makes me laugh. I just feel like she's someone that's taken a lot of different chances and started out and after college and paid her dues. And I think it'd be really great. And I feel like my humor's self-deprecating. There's a lot of, I think, elements that are similar in that self-deprecation. So I think it'd be fun to sit down with her and talk about just her best stories and some of the things that might have been more challenging for her. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Okay. That's a good choice. Nothing wrong with that. Because I mean, you know, we get to meet obviously a ton of people, but there's always people that you would still want to encounter. You know,
yeah.
my big famous one, and I've said this story before, but you know, like I got a note from Jim Gaffigan. That was really cool. You know, that was a fun moment. I'll definitely cherish that. That was really cool. And he was very generous. He pulled me aside and, you know, said, hey, why don't you try this? And I was like, okay.
That's so cool. Yeah.
Right. Like,
you know,
he was listening. He was listening to my set. That was really neat.
That is so cool. Yeah, I did have probably my favorite moment was last year. I got to perform on the same show as Julian Garofalo, and
nice.
I'm 42, so Julian Garofalo is right in my like Reality Bites was one of my favorite movies
sure.
when I was growing up, and so she was. I mean, she's one of my favorite comedians, and after the show. She hung out with me for like a half hour and
oh, wow.
it was probably like one of the best moments because she's one of my comic heroes and it was a lot of fun and she's so real. And so she's just like, yeah, let's hang out. And it was a lot of fun. So, and I know Jim Gaffigan too. He's never given me like, so that's pretty amazing that he did that with you, but what I like about Jim Gaffigan is he's always out trying new material. And
yeah.
so he's one of the nicest, I feel like, in the business. Like, he'll talk to everyone. He'll get up on stage at, you know, any show and try out new material and be willing to talk to other fellow comedians and comedians that are starting out. So that's pretty cool that he gave you a note. And he's one of the funniest, I think, really.
Oh yeah, listen, he's killing it, obviously. I mean, but Garofalo's, that's no slouch. I mean, that's that she's terrific, and she's been around a long time. I mean, I remember watching her on Comedy Central back when they would just show clips of stand up, and that was it. Like, that was the whole channel. And so I saw a ton of her on there.
Yeah, she's so great. And she got up, her set that day was just talking about some of the junk mail that we all get, like, and you know, for. That's the beauty of comedians, that they see the potential in just the everyday, like getting the mail. Like, we all get junk mail and, you know, we open up our mailbox and there's like, most of it is junk. Right. And I think somebody like Janine Garofalo can take that and be like, I know there's something really funny here. And just make, and you brought up Seinfeld a lot. I mean, the fact that he could make, you know, losing your socks in the dryer, like we've all lose our socks in the dryer, and make it into this joke that everybody can relate to.
Right.
It's pretty incredible. Like, you just take this comment. So she did this whole set about, and I mean, I was laughing so hard I could barely breathe. And I think she's great. And she was as kind off stage as I would have imagined her to be. And so it was nice when your expectations are exceeded and you meet somebody, you're like, wow, this actually is better than I thought if I were to have met this person in person.
Right. Now, that's the best, when you meet someone and the expectations are exceeded, because obviously it's always disappointing if you meet someone and they're like, I went to rock and roll fantasy camp for my 40th birthday. That was my big 40th birthday present.
That's awesome.
And it was great. I mean, it was a great experience. I'm not knocking it at all. But like Ace Frehley, who is not really one of my guitar heroes, but he was so obnoxious. And it was like, it just wasn't, you know, and it was like, it was fine, but it's like, boy, I'm glad this is not the guy I've been waiting to meet, because he's just not fun. Everybody else was amazing. Lita Ford was incredible. You know, Rudy Sarzo was incredible. Like, you know, everybody else there, Kip Winger, Mark, it was great, up and down. Like, I am praising it to the skies. But, you know, and every other time I've had an experience at a rock camp, they've been really good. So I got to preface it by saying that. But, you know, it is possible to meet someone and have them be disappointing, you know, because not everyone understands that. It's a bummer, because so when you meet someone and they exceed your expectations, it's that much better.
It's so true. I mean, I had a similar experience. I loved Kevin Bacon. I mean, we all know that the Kevin Bacon 6 degrees of separation game. And when I was in fundraising at Muscular Dystrophy, we had an event, and the Bacon brothers, his band with his brother, played. Same thing. Like, he was not that gracious. He wasn't that, like, well, I was like, Kevin Bacon, like, thank you so much for being here. And I'm sure maybe he was just having an off night. But it was like that moment where you're like, I thought my dreams of meeting Kevin Bacon were so different in my mind.
Yeah.
And it just didn't happen. But I think we all have those experiences. And so when, like you said, when someone like Gaffigan or Janine Garofalo just exceed those, it's a moment that you'll never forget. I know for me, I'll never forget that moment. And for them, it could have just been another day. But for me, it was like, this is so cool. Someone that I just have so much respect for is talking to me after I got to perform on a stage that she just was on. Like, it was very cool.
So let me try my Gaffigan on you. So this was the note he gave me, because you actually are appreciating my limited impression. So let's try this.
Like,
when you say stay at home dad, you should say it's emasculating. Does that make sense? I feel like it kind of sounds like Gaffigan.
I had a funny. This is a funny story. So I'm in the dating world in New York. Lots of fun. And constantly kind of swiping on all the different sites. And I had been swiping one night, and the next day I'm at this coffee shop, and I'm looking at this guy, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I think we like swiped on each other the other night. Like, he seemed to be the right age demographic, somewhere between 40 and 50. And I'm staring at him, he's staring at me. So I figure he must think, and then it hit me that it was actually Ben Stiller that I was staring at. And he finally just smiled and was like, yeah, like, I'm Ben Stiller. Like, I literally, because you know when you see somebody, at least for me, when I see somebody really famous in person, sometimes it takes a second, because it seems unnatural to see them at the same coffee shop as you. So I'm trying to place him, like, right? And I'm placing him in Tinder. I'm placing him in a Tinder site that I was, because he's in theory my demographic, but not exactly, right? Because Ben Stiller probably wouldn't date me. But in that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, I think it's Ben. And I think it's, you know, the guy from Tinder, and it was Ben Stiller. So in New York, and I'm sure like in LA and lots of places, you have these moments. Like, Seinfeld lives somewhere around the corner from me. I'm definitely in a different building, one that has central air, I'm sure. But
yes, I'm sure.
I always think maybe I'll see him on the street, because a lot of comedians live in New York, and specifically in the Upper West Side, which is right in my little vicinity here.
Right.
But
no,
I think you should keep doing your Seinfeld impersonations. I think they're good.
Okay, I'll work on it. I'll work it into the act. This is encouraging. I appreciate the encouragement. This is terrific. So, Stephanie, this has been great. Thank you so much for calling in and for doing the show. Why don't you tell everyone where they can find you on the social medias and then any shows you have coming up?
Sure. So I'm Stephanie Goldklang. I think I'm the only Stephanie Goldklang out there. Goldklang. Fun last name. So that's my Facebook and my Instagram. And I put everything out there that I'm in. So I've been doing a lot of shows through F Comedy, through West Side Comedy Club, and I'm looking to put together a show coming up on 4th of July weekend virtually. So I will be putting all of that up on my social media and look forward to hopefully seeing people virtually and hopefully in person soon. My next show was supposed to be at Caroline's on March 23rd. So I think hopefully that's going to be pushed to the fall, and I'll definitely put that out on all of my social media. So I really appreciate you having me on today, and I look forward to seeing you perform tonight.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, I have a show tonight. Everyone,
yes.
Check my social media. It's Brett Singer on Facebook and Brett Singer on Twitter. And thank you. Thank you so much. This has been Brett from the Bunker. We will see you Monday at 11 a.m. And please stay safe.